And we've been talking then for the last several weeks, we've encountered these same concepts of faith and really and doubt through Malcolm's writings. If you remember, we started a couple of weeks ago and we had read one of his poems. It was called Father of My Faith, but it was written about doubting Thomas, which I found fascinating. Like of all the people he could have written about, if he was going to write a poem, Father of My Faith, like maybe Peter, or maybe even, although it's not there, Jesus, you know, but no, he's like the Father of My Faith, doubting Thomas. And, but what we talked about is that doubt really can be a good thing. And we've even said that all great things began with doubt. And so we need to learn to accept and really and sometimes embrace our own questions and doubts and explore them because that's the pathway to discovery and really the pathway to God. And so that was the first week. Last week, we studied another one of his sonnets, and it was called With All of Your Mind. And that God has called us to worship him, to love him, to come to him with all of our heart, soul, mind and strength, that Jesus presented to us this view of a very integrated spirituality, where it wasn't all just about just faith and just accepting it and believing. It wasn't all just about this heart stuff, but it was also about the mind and that we come to Jesus with both of them. And so we started talking about this concept of faith and what does it even mean? And I gave you this passage in Hebrews chapter 11, where it says, the writer of Hebrews here says, that faith is this absolute conviction that there are realities that you have never seen. I love that second part there. Faith is the absolute conviction that there are realities that you've never seen. In other words, I think maybe you could say that faith then is to be 100% convinced that you don't know it all. Faith is really, it's not about, in other words, faith is not about knowing. Faith is about unknowing. It's not a form of certainty. It's actually a form of weakness. It's about embracing this stance that says, I really don't know. It's possible, and I don't know. And so many times we reverse that faith is this way, this method of making us strong. And but really, it's the, I told you, it's the epistemological equivalent of it's possible, right? And so we ended last week with a passage out of Proverbs, in Proverbs chapter 3, where the writer tells us, trust in the Lord with all of your heart. Lean not on your own understandings, but in all of your ways acknowledge him, and he will make your path straight. And we said that we kind of ended with this concept that faith is a lot like trust. Well, I want to dig into that today. I want to explore this idea that says faith is not like a well-reasoned argument. Faith is not another way of discovering and knowing that can counter rationalism and materialism. But faith is really a lot more like trust. And I think probably some of you have probably experienced something like this before. Anyone ever done a trust fall before? You ever been one of those like youth group things where you had to do a trust fall? And it was just it, like, actually, let's do it real quick. I need a couple of volunteers. Evie, can you help me out? Come on, Evie. Come on up here. And I need somebody big and strong. I'm going to get a couple people. Marissa, and now let me think. Mike, can you help me out?
Am I going to be the one to fall?
Well, maybe actually... Okay, let's try. Yeah, come on out here. All right, let's do this, Mike. I want you guys to stand right here, and we're going to catch Mike. You think you can do this?
I already fell once in here.
That's true. It was all right. No, okay, well, let me ask you this. Let me just ask you guys a question then. If it were Marissa and Mike trying to catch Evie, no, you stand right here, and you're just going to, you know how to do a trust fall, right?
You just fall.
Well, yeah, that's why I picked you. I thought you could handle this.
Not for
me. So he was like, I'm okay. Okay, I got to put that in my notes real quick for if I ever use this again. No, but I mean, seriously, if we were going to do a trust fall right now, and I said, Evie, you're going to fall back, and Marissa, and she-woman, Mike, who's, you know, fallen here several times, he's not going to happen again. I think we'd all be like, I think we got this. But if we really would turn it around, and I was like this, and it's like, okay, Mike, Evie and Marissa are going to catch you. I know you don't know what you're doing. You can just go have a seat. Everybody give it up for Marissa. You're done. No, I think... You ever have this idea for an illustration, then when you actually do it in real... You've probably never happened. It'll happen one of these days. No, I think we would all be like, that's just not going to work, right? Because I used to go to campus life growing up, and it was just like this place where all different youth groups would come together once a month and do these things. And we would do things like that, trust falls. But I tell you, I remember, think about the trust fall is, we think it's so difficult to trust God when we're falling, right? Things are going bad and the circumstances around us are coming crashing down. And then we need to learn how to just trust God. Do we have faith that God is going to catch me when I fall? And a lot of times we think, well, you know, I don't know, because right now I'm really falling. Right now, my world is really falling apart. It's really, really difficult. But the truth of the matter is that when you're doing a trust fall, it's not the fall, it's the catcher, that really matters. It's not the fall that makes it hard to trust. It's the person catching you that makes it hard or easy to trust, right? Because if it was Mike going to be falling down onto Evie, you get all the trust in the world, but I'm thinking, I'm not sure that's going to work. No offense.
Right.
But it was going to be difficult, right? Here's the thing. What you're going through doesn't determine whether or not you can trust God. God determines whether or not you can trust God. Or in other words, maybe I could just say your idea of God determines what you think of when you think about God determines whether or not you can trust God. This is, by the way, why your definition of God is so important. We've been talking about this at Guys Night for a long time. I want to do a teaching series. I think we're going to do it this fall. But I want to do a teaching series just about God. What is it that we talk about? When we use the word God, what does that word mean? Because we all have some idea, but like, are we picturing some old dude with a beard, or like, is it just like this force? But this is why your idea or definition of God is so critical, right? Because it's not the fall that determines whether or not you can trust God. It's your idea of God, your definition of God. If you have a God that is punitive and retaliates and is petty and capricious and violent, like if that's your idea of God, it's going to be very hard for you to trust that God. If your idea of God is more like just this impersonal force that really doesn't care, it's going to be difficult for you to trust when you're falling in a God that you don't even know cares about you at all. And so your definition of God is really, really important, because the truth is that trust is confidence that's based on the strength of another. And that's why it's so difficult for us, by the way, because we live in this cult of wellness. We live in a culture, in a world that is constantly telling us this narrative, pulling us into this narrative that's all about my strength, me being strong, me being perfect, me being the one that can carry my own weight. But yet trust is always about falling onto the weight of another. Trust is really not about making you strong. It's about the strength of another. And so you can see how truly trust can and oftentimes conflict with religion. And that's why I think it's better to talk about faith in terms of trust. Because just faith or religion, belief, I think you could use the word believing. Believing are always things that makes me strong, right? It makes me feel good. I get a sense of certainty in an uncertain world. Or it gives me confidence to move through difficult days. Helps me kind of sort things out and put things into perspective. Or maybe comfort when things are falling apart. Religion and belief can give you that. But the same is true for just logic and reason and evidence. Those are things that are designed to make us feel strong. I mean, think about the words we even use about reason. We'll say things like, that's a really strong argument, or that's a kind of a weak point, right? So when we're using mental reasoning, is always these things that are designed to kind of make us strong. And I'm not saying that's bad. It's very positive force in our life, and it's a great thing, but it's not what trust is. Trust is not about becoming strong. Trust is about counting on and relying upon the strength of another. It's always a who question. I think Mike maybe did you put, I think maybe you put this in an email. We were talking about back and forth about faith and trust, and Mike said this, and it really stood out to me. He said, "Man, faith, trust is always a who question. It's not about what. It's about who. Where are you going to put your trust? So you can believe in a God that you do not trust, but you can't trust a God that you do not know, because trust is always a who question. It's about who am I going to place my trust in. You can't trust somebody that you don't really know. You can't trust somebody that you think is out to get you. You can't fully trust somebody that you think might be scheming behind your back. You can't really trust somebody that you think is going to turn on you the moment that you fail. And so trust is always a who question. It's not about your strength. It's about God's strength. And so I think that brings us to the question that we'll really need to answer this morning is, well, then, can we trust God? Is the God that we serve, is the God that we come today to gather and to read and to worship and to learn about, is this God worthy of our trust? And really, why should we? All right, can God catch us when we're falling? Important question. Can he do it? Is he strong enough? But I think even a more pertinent question, the one that I usually wrestle with, is not can God catch me, but will he? I mean, would he catch me if he could? Is this the type of God who is going to be there for me when I need him? Because I feel like there's been times in my life where I've tried to name it, claim it, and just believe it, receive it, and just try to say the right things and do the right things, and felt like I fell flat on my face. So can God catch me, and will he catch me? I mean, can I trust in this God. And so I want to just talk about that for a little bit this morning, and maybe give some reasons. This is not a well thought out logical argument. I was thinking a lot of times I try to be a little bit more philosophical as I'm teaching, but today I just want to give you some things that I've discovered in my life about why I feel like I can trust God. And why it's an important question. I think St. Paul realized that this was a question that we would be asking. I think he wrestled with this, and I think he knew we might be wrestling with it because we would wonder if this Jesus was worthy of our trust. So he wrote to the church in Colossae. He said this in Colossians chapter 1, in verse 15. Speaking of the Christ, he says, "He is the exact image of the invisible God, the firstborn of creation, the eternal. It was by him that everything was created, the heavens, the earth, all things within and upon them, all things seen and unseen, thrones and dominions, spiritual powers and authorities. Every detail was crafted through his design, by his own hands and for his purposes. He has always been. It is his hand that holds everything together. He is the head of this body, the church. He is the beginning, the firstborn of those to be reborn from the dead, so that in every aspect, at every view, in everything, he is first. God was pleased that all his fullness should forever dwell in the Son, who, as predetermined by God, bled peace into the world by his death on the cross, as God's means of reconciling to himself the whole creation, all things in heaven and all things on earth." Can God catch you when you fall? Paul's definitive answer is he can and he will. I love that part where it says that his hands hold all things together, that God is the force that unifies all of our existence, that Jesus came and he bled peace into the world. How beautiful is that? That by dying on the cross, that he bled peace into the world to reconcile back to God all things, whether things on heaven or things on the earth. So let me just give you this morning three things that, at least for me, and that I'm not saying there's only three, there might be 30 more you can think of, but three things that I feel like you can trust, you can always trust about God. Number one, and this has been a difficult one for me to really come to learn, and I'll be honest, there are still times when I trust this, but I also doubt it. Does that make sense? Because you can do that. I can trust it with my soul, but intellectually, this is still something that I wrestle with. But here's what I've learned that I can trust, is number one, that you can trust that all things will work together for good. And this is one of those scriptures, right? You've probably saw this on a bumper sticker. This is so common, and I think it's commonly misconstrued and taken out of context. But just look at really what it says. I want to read it to you again in the Voice translation. In Romans chapter 8, it says, "We are confident that God is able to orchestrate everything to work towards something good and beautiful when we love him and accept his invitation to live according to his plan." And I think a lot of times we take this passage completely out of context. We take it this to mean like, well, if I just hold on or if I have enough faith, then everything in my life is going to be good and beautiful. You know what I mean? That's the way it's commonly taken. And if you go to a Christian bookstore and you can get a nice little, like a bookmark, a Bible bookmark with a golden tassel. And it'll just, you know, it'll bless your bottom. And it'll just say, you know, all things work together for good. But really, that's not the intent of this verse. Here, in essence, what Paul is arguing here is that everything has a purpose. In creation, in the universe, in your world, nothing is purposeless. That God is good enough and big enough that it has the creative ability to take everything that happens to you and use those things to create something good and beautiful. And I think a lot of times we mistakenly think that what God's saying is that everything that happens to you will be good, but it doesn't say that. It says God is good enough and you can trust him that he'll take all of the terrible, demented, twisted, messed up, not good things that happen to you, and God has the creative energies that he can figure out how to do something beautiful even with that. It doesn't say what happens to you will be good, but it says that you can trust him to take that and create something good out of it. In other words, it just essentially means that everything in life has a purpose, that your life is not random, that you're not just some cosmic coincidence, that your life is not the inevitable consequence of quantum mutations and fluctuations, like that there's more to life than that. And I just got to be honest with you, I don't have a good, strong, rational argument for this belief. I mean, I listen to podcasts about physics and every week, and I love science. But I just got to be honest with you, the idea that the universe has purpose and meaning just makes more sense to me. Like, I just can't wrap my mind around a universe that is completely capricious and random and purposeless, and nothing has any meaning. Because I tell you, like, I look into, oh man, I'm gonna break up sin, but I can look in the eyes of my son, and I know I was meant to be his father. It wasn't an accident. There was some purpose to this world, and it was more than just like cosmic dominoes that began to fall throughout, all the way stretching back to the Big Bang that brings us to this moment. But this world has meaning, and I get it. Like, I understand that the best minds today, if you read all of the greatest physicists and psychologists, they will tell you that your sense of consciousness and your sense of free will is simply an illusion that your brain has evolved to create for you, right? And that we have this sense of meaning and we have this sense of purpose, but it's really, there is no purpose, there is no meaning. It's just simply an illusion that some sort of evolutionary mind trick. Your brain just creates this sense of consciousness, but it's really not there. It's just a biomechanical machine. And I just can't buy that. And here's why, because if our senses have evolved to lie to us, well then how can we trust our senses when they tell us that we can't trust our senses? You know what I mean? Like, if that's the truth, if there is no meaning and purpose, but yet we have this great sense of meaning, yeah, I get it. I understand. Maybe the sense of meaning that I feel is just how we have evolved so that we could be cultural creatures and exist in a humane society. It could be nothing more than a lie. But if we can't trust our senses, then how can we even trust the argument that tells us that everything your senses tell you is false? Like, this just makes more sense to me, that the universe has purpose and meaning. And if we live in a universe that has purpose and meaning, then what you can do is you can trust that there's a God who's able to take whatever it is that you're going through and whatever you struggle with and whatever's happened, he can take those things, as terrible and heinous and messed up as they are, and he can use them to create something that's good and something beautiful. I get bogged down there. Another thing you can trust is you can trust that God has your best interests at heart. I love how the Message renders this verse that we just read in Romans. I'll read it to you in the Message. It says, he knows us. He knows us far better than we know ourselves, knows our pregnant condition. Think about that, the imagery, that our life is full of these possibilities, right? That our life is giving birth to. It's in other words, the idea that the Bible's telling us here is that it's not the universe that's just happening and things are out of control, but like there's all these possibilities that could come out of your life. And he knows that your life is pregnant with possibilities. I love that imagery. And he keeps us present before God. That's why we can be so sure that every detail in our lives of love for God is worked into something good. He knows us, every detail. You can trust that God has your best interest at heart. In other words, this is a story about us. This isn't a story God is telling that's just about his glory. And yeah, I've heard theologians talk about that we're just here so we could give glory to God. It's just a story about him. But no, this verse tells us, no, that he knows you. And he knows me, and he knows every detail, and he knows all the possibilities and potentials that are lying dormant inside of our heart. And it's like this is a story about us. So we can trust him. We can be so sure, we can be confident that every detail of our life will work together for something good. Another thing that I've learned to trust is you can trust that you matter enough for God to catch you. Like I mentioned earlier, it's not a stretch for me to believe that God could catch me. It's always difficult to believe that he would, or that he will. You know, have you ever felt those times where you've maybe seemed like, God, are you there? Like you're knocking on the door and you're not getting an answer and you're wondering, God, where are you? Because if you're there, this would be the prayer that I needs answered. Like I may have prayed a really stupid prayer yesterday, but this is the prayer that I really, really need an answer. And you just feel like God, I know you could catch me, but I'm not so sure that you will, because I've fallen a few times and I've wound up flat on my face. And I thought there was somebody there that was big enough and strong enough, and apparently that person wasn't there. And we struggle with that. And I love this verse in 1 Peter chapter 1. Where Peter says, teaches us, he says, cast all of your anxieties on him. Another translation says, cast all of your cares on him. Cast all of your anxieties on him. And then he says, why? Because he cares for you. that we are not just an extra in God's unfolding drama, but we are essential, and he cares for us. So we can take our anxieties, the things that we are struggling with, our cares, our stressors, we can take the things that we wrestle with, and we can take them, and we literally, and I know this sounds like it's oversimple, but I think maybe it's just not. I think we can take those things, and we can just say, God, here you go. And we can give. And this is really why worship is such a critical time in our lives. And I think sometimes we maybe miss it. Because it's not about telling a God who already knows how awesome he is, how awesome he is. Because that sounds like a colossal waste of time, right? Like, seriously, God is up there and has enough of some sort of a complex that he needs a bunch of us to get together and sing some songs to tell him how good he is. Like, I think God is aware. He's got enough confidence. But I think really it's not about telling God. It's about discovering ourselves. It's coming because we, like I said earlier, you can believe in a God you do not trust, but you cannot trust a God you do not know. And so it's coming to the place where we can experience God's presence in a way that we can literally know him. Because at the end of the day, we have to ask ourselves the question, am I going to trust God? Am I going to trust God? I mean, that seemed like it's going to be over simple because I think a lot of times we say, well, but what if I just decide I'm just not going to trust? And the problem is, and I don't think that's really a viable option for us because we're all going to trust something. And we've talked about this before, but you, no matter how you live your life, you have to live by faith. And we say that every week because we want to make that a conscious decision, but ultimately it's not an option. You're going to live by faith. You're going to get in the car and you're going to drive down the road and just have faith that the oncoming traffic's not going to swerve into your lane, right? That's just, you're just going to trust. You're going to trust that when that doctor writes you a prescription that he or she knows enough about what they're talking about that they're not going to prescribe to you a lethal dose, right? You're going to live by faith. And so the question is not if you're going to trust, but who will you trust? And so I ask you, who are you going to trust? Yourself? Because I think that's what a lot of people do. We're like, well, I'm not going to put my trust in some God. I'm only going to rely on myself. I'll trust no one. Maybe you've been burnt before. Someone's let you down. You've been betrayed. And so now you live your life in this way where you think, man, I'm just only going to trust myself. And my thing is that I just want to ask you, like, okay, do you have any good, like, logical, rational arguments that says that that's a good idea? You know? Have you ever let yourself down before? Because a lot of people are like, well, I don't have a good reason to trust in God. There's no rational argument. I just trust myself. You got any good rational argument that's a good place to place your trust? You ever done something? This is why the season of Lent, by the way, is so important. Because once you realize that you can't even defeat caffeine, it's a little easier to recognize, well, I can't trust myself, right? Like, and I'm not saying that you should see yourself as weak. Actually, I believe we should, when we begin to trust God, it's then we can recognize that through God, we can overcome and that we can have that strength. But I think you just got to trust yourself and lead yourself. Because I'll tell you, that only leads to a life of anxiety. And some of you have experienced that. You've tried to carry the ball. You've tried to be the one that's in charge. And you let yourself down. And now you feel like all the pressure is on you. Right? And you're carrying that pressure around all the time. And the anxiety just builds because ultimately, somewhere deep inside, there's this constant voice that says, listen, you're not worthy of the trust that you're putting in yourself. You're going to fail. And you're living with that fear all the moments. And so then instead of just accepting your weakness, instead of accepting the fact that you are at times broken, you'd have to join that cult of wellness and project this image of strength, not even to the world, but to yourself. So who are you going to trust? Like a lot of times I think people say, well, I'm just going to trust in science. It's what we can observe and it's rational. I'm going to put my faith in reason and philosophy. And I think that's a viable option. And you may trust that someday science can answer all of the questions. You may trust that one day, maybe not now, like I think most philosophers would say, yeah, listen, right now, science can't answer all the questions, but you may trust that someday they can. And only I would say to that is like, okay. But that's still an act of faith. So you're going to put your faith in something, faith that one day science will answer the questions, faith that maybe someday you'll be stronger than what you are now. But you will put your faith in something. So the question I want to ask is, will you trust God? The question is not if you will have faith. The question is not, will you trust? The question is, who will you trust? We're out of time, guys, if you want to come up here. And I want us to think about that as we move to wrap up this service and prepare our hearts to receive the elements of communion. Because trusting in God is not like it's easy. Maybe you can make a strong case for it. Maybe today, hopefully you've heard some things that say, yeah, I guess maybe that makes sense. But it's not easy to trust in God. I told you earlier that when I went to Campus Life as a teenager, that we'd do things like have these trust falls, you know, and there was always some sort of crazy thing, kooky thing that we were doing to learn some lesson about God. But one thing I remember is we would do this, and they would always get some volunteer up there, and then they'd have a couple youth leaders or a couple adults back there who was going to catch you, and that first person would be standing there like, can I trust? Oh, my gosh. It's like, and we're all like, are they going to catch him or not? And, you know, you're pretty certain that no one wants a lawsuit, so you're pretty sure it's going to be okay. But, you know, what if they don't catch me? That's the whole thing, right? And so I remember that first person, they'd always talk somebody into going up there first. And at first, no one would raise, like, who wants to do this? Any volunteers? And not really, no one raised their hand. But they'd talk somebody into come up and doing it. And that person would stand there, and they would kind of look back, you know, and just, you know, make sure they got lined up just perfect. And then maybe with a little bit of coaxing, and maybe with a little bit of, you know, pressure, they eventually will fall. And then, phew, the leaders would catch them. And everyone would kind of breathe this collective sigh of, but what I always thought was interesting is not that, because that, you know, that's just kind of silly, really. But what I thought was interesting is how right after that first person went, everybody else was ready to volunteer. You're like, okay, I'll go. You know what I mean? Like, I knew all along it was cool. I just was, you know, I didn't want to be first. But I think there's some lesson in that, right? Like, I think it's difficult to trust God. And I think that we needed somebody to go first. Like, I think we just needed, I think it's one of the reasons why Jesus came. And it really, I don't want to oversimplify it, but I think one of the reasons why Jesus came is so that he could demonstrate to us what it was like to live a life where you trusted that God would catch you when you fall. That he would lead the way, and maybe it would be a little bit easier for us after he demonstrated that no matter what you're facing, no matter what you're going through, that God can and will catch you. And so Jesus gave us this example, and this is why, I mean, he struggled with the same doubt we face. He hung on the cross and said, Father, why are you abandoning me? Why have you rejected me? He's suspended between heaven and earth. He has this existential crisis and says, God, where are you? Like, he doubted. In the Garden of Gethsemane, before he was, on the night he was betrayed, he prayed and he said, God, is there any way you can get me out of this? I mean, that's like modern, it's kind of my version, but that's what he said. God, is there any way to let this cup pass from me? He struggled with this. But even though it was difficult, even though it was hard, he went through and he fell and God caught him. And I think today he went first to show us that we can trust him. And so just this morning, can we close our eyes? I want to do some soul searching this morning. I just want you to look inside. I want you to ask yourself, is there some place in life right now where life has just smacked you and it's beating you down, and honestly, it's getting difficult? Maybe your trust is beginning to waver a little bit. Maybe there's some areas of your life, because this is what happens to me, that you kind of try to ignore and you never even bring them up in prayer because you prayed for them about 10 million times and God never answered any of those prayers, and now you're just kind of embarrassed to even bring it up. Again, like, where are there any places where it's difficult for you to trust God? See, this is why Jesus came, to take on flesh, to become bread and wine, something that we can touch, that we can feel, something we could follow, that he could demonstrate what it would mean for us to trust God. And here's my thing, would you be willing to trust him today in that area? Maybe to you, it's today, for you, it's just like, I struggle just believing. I have all these doubts. I have all these questions. Awesome. Great. Because faith can only begin to blossom in those areas where you have doubts. So right there where you doubt today, will you be willing to just trust God and say, God, would you catch me when I fall? Maybe you're going through something difficult and you say, God, I need you to catch me. I don't know how I'm going to make it through this. I have no idea what tomorrow is going to be. And I'm going to fall flat on my face if you do not catch me. Would you be willing to trust him this morning? Father, I just pray to God that you would help us to trust. God, would you open up our soul to that space today, Lord, that we would recognize that it's not in our strength, but it's in our weakness. It's not in the moments where we are poised, but it's when we are falling apart. Father, help us to recognize that this truth can nourish our soul, that you came to demonstrate a life that trusts in God. And may we follow you into that. Jesus, you are our example. So today, if you need that strength, if you need that intimacy with God to give you cause for your trust, I want to invite you to this table of communion. This is where we gather. It's where we can experience, we can grab hold of the physical reality of who Christ was for us. We can allow his strength to become our strength. And so on the night that the Lord was betrayed, he gathered with his friends and took a loaf of bread. And as he broke it, he said, "This is my body, which is broken for you." And then after supper, he took a cup and he poured it, saying, "This cup represents my blood, just being poured out for you." He led the way. He fell into the arms of grace, and God caught him as he fell. And God will do the same for you if you trust him. I invite you now to come and to receive these elements of communion.